Happy New Year, everyone. This is Jen with the Minorities in Publishing podcast. For new and returning listeners, you know you can find the podcast on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And we are in a new year after a bit of a necessary hiatus. And I hope everyone's doing okay. And yeah, I'm going to leave it at that because it's 2017. It's kind of too early to go into other things to talk about in terms of the political landscape. But I want to focus on what the podcast is here for. So now that we're in the new year, I do want to say welcome to the latest guest, Lara.
Me.
Who is a screenwriter, disability advocate, PhD student, with an emphasis on disability studies, and we're on Skype, so I kind of like to make sure to preface this for the disparity in audio in terms of what you hear from me and what you hear from the guest. So thank you so much for being on, and Happy New Year.
Yay, Happy New Year. I'm excited that we make this work. Really excited.
Well, it's so funny because you are friends with previous guest, Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie Higgins, who I adore.
Yes.
Have you actually met Carrie or no?
No, I haven't. So this is funny. So I met Carrie through my friend Jordan Rosenfeld, she is in the binders, and she was posting about my BinderCon panel, and Carrie was responding to her, and I was like, oh, hey, and I kind of said hey, nice to meet you or whatever, because she was like, oh my gosh, Lara is so awesome or whatever, We've never met in person yet, but I would love to meet Carrie. Sometimes it's a little intimidating. I feel like Carrie is a better advocate than I am. I'm just like, I'll read her stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, she's right. Carrie is awesome. So we could just fangirl over Carrie for the whole podcast.
I know.
So you learn a lot from your fellow, advocates, you know?
Definitely. And I've learned a lot from both of you, and I was introduced to you actually through the BinderCon LA panel that happened last year too, because it was such a, we don't see those types of panels that discuss disability so openly and have a range of people in terms of, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the terms, you know, who am I to say, oh, don't you know, about visible and invisible disability. And I feel like in the literary world, we see more of the invisible disabilities and we hear about them more. We hear more about the mental health, but we don't hear more about the physical disabilities that also cater to more of the conversation on accessibility.
Yeah, and accessibility is one of those things where it's people, I think it comes from people just not being aware what accessibility is, what is needed, because people are like, oh, accessibility is a wheelchair ramp, and I'm like, no, that's not involved. Actually, I'm in a wheelchair, and I'll just say, no, that's not accessibility. You're just, I don't know what you're doing, but that's not accessibility. If you have accessibility, you need to make it on all levels for all people with disabilities, and even with something like the ADA that we have, that's just not going to happen. It's just not. And I think that's what makes it really hard. And that's what makes it harder for people with disabilities who want to do jobs, who want to do any kind of job, you know, especially creative jobs. But
Well, it's interesting because I want to go more into that as well as what you were talking about in terms of stigma in representation for the disabled community. But you are a writer. You do screenwriting. And for those, I'm going to link to this as well. You did this really great talk about the stigma of representation, of disabled representation in film that's available on Vimeo.
And TV.
You're also, as mentioned, getting a PhD in disability studies. You're a writer, and then you're getting your PhD in this specific realm of hopefully helpful education for others as well, but also bringing attention to a necessary topic. Do you feel like that was part of a desire to influence more of your writing?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I'll just start from the very, 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 very beginning of my writing. I kind of always knew I wanted to be a writer, since I was 9. Which apparently a lot of people, when you talk to them, what do you want to do when you grow up? A lot of people don't know. But I always said, Mom, Dad, I want to be a writer. And I got this notebook, like a lined notebook, like a Spotty Dotty from the Sanrio store notebook for Hanukkah. One year, I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I used to like keep a diary. When I was 10 years old, I talked a little bit about this at BinderCon. I got a wish granted to me from the Starlight Foundation, which is kind of like Make-A-Wish, but it's a different organization, and it grants wishes to kids with disabilities, like whatever they want. And I was 10 years old, and I said, you know, to my parents, like, I want to meet this actress from this show. And it was a show in the 90s called The Secret World of Alex Mack.
Oh my gosh, and I remember that.
Yeah, that was my favorite show. That was like my very first favorite show growing up. And I said, I want to meet Larissa, who is the lead actress in the TV show. And like, I just wanted to meet her. I was so fascinated, you know. So I got to go and I got to meet her and I got to spend a day on the set and meet her. And the creator of the show was on set that day because they were filming the series finale. And he's Thomas Lynch, who was the creator of like Kids Incorporated.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like all these kids shows in the 80s and 90s and stuff, like all the kids shows for like Nickelodeon and Disney, he's created a lot of them. He's created The Jersey and I think Caitlin's Way and all these shows. And I remember him coming up to me and being like, we have a surprise for you. And I was like, oh my gosh. And they let me film a scene of the show. Like they put me behind the camera and let me film a scene of the show. And it was the series finale and it was, you know, very emotional. And that was just such a cool experience to have. As a 10-year-old, like, that was my first introduction to the entertainment industry. My first time being on a set. So far, my only time being on a set. But we actually got reconnected a couple of years ago. I found her Twitter, and I found that she was doing a play in L.A., and I was living in L.A. at the time. And I went to go see her play, and she remembered me, and we were both, like, crying. Like, it was just a very, like, emotional reunion, and her mom was there, and her mom remembered me. And Thomas Lynch, who was the creator, he had come to see Larissa, and he was there, and he's like, I remember you. So, like, that was my, as far as entertainment, that was my introduction to the industry. That was a big deal for me. But after that, I always sort of was writing. I was writing in middle school. I wrote kind of, I think I wrote, like, a TV script, like a fake thing. I don't know. I wrote a lot of fan fiction, which I wanted to talk a little bit about, because if you're a fan fiction writer, like, I feel like they get a lot of flack, but I think it's perfectly valid, like, and it develops writing skills, because I've been writing fan fiction since I was, like, 15. I'm not writing it as much anymore, but I think it's so important for writers, you know, it's so important for writers, like, to develop their skills that way, and like, don't bash it, because you never know. So I was always writing, but I got into high school and I was sort of like nearing the end of high school and starting college, and I really liked TV. Like, I'm more into TV than film. I really, really like TV. And you know, Buffy was a big influence for a lot of people because it is a strong girl show. But what really influenced me was a show that came after Buffy. It didn't last very long. It was called True Calling. It was on Fox, and it starred Eliza Dushku, who was Faith on Buffy. Yeah, and Jason Priestley. And it was really good, and it was about a girl who, like, went back in time and relived days and had to, she worked in a morgue, and she had to, like, save the people who asked for her help, to help them. When they would ask her for help, she would have to find out about them and help them. And that was the show, like, when people ask me, why do you want to write for TV? Like, for some reason, and it had nothing to do with disability, I liked the whole female empowerment thing that the show had in it, and it, I feel like it had a good message for women. It had a good backbone in it of, like, talking about life and death. But that show really had an influence on me in high school and going into college, even though it ended by the time I was in college. And so I thought, well, I started writing disabled characters in my fan fiction, and then I was like, well, I could write about disabled characters in scripts and stories too. Like, that, like, because I don't see myself in the media, and I'm watching all this media. And also, going back a little bit, meeting Jordan was a big influence on me, because when I was in high school, she was getting her MFA, and I wanted to get my MFA and, like, be like her. Like, I was like, oh, I want to get my MFA and be like Jordan and be, you know, to me, she was, like, she still is, like, the very example of, like, a very successful writer, you know. So I kind of saw that, and I was like, okay, I want to get my MFA. Like, I wasn't sure about the PhD. It was there, but it wasn't, like, MFA was what I really wanted, but I didn't know it was going to be in screenwriting until kind of later on, because it took me a while to get through my undergrad. I just kind of, I don't know, like, my major was film studies, my minor was disability studies, and people think that disability studies is special ed, and it's not, and I want to debunk that right now, that disability studies is basically about studying the culture and society of disabled people, and studying, like, what we call, like, the social model of disability, which is, like, how disabled people function in the world and society, and what we're going to talk about later, like, you know, the stigma and stuff. If people have the stigma and the attitudes about disability, that's more disabling than a person's disability. So that's kind of what I'm studying, but my minor was disability studies. There wasn't any disability in film classes ever. Like, it doesn't exist, really. There's not a lot of classes on that. I went to Berkeley, which is one of the places that has a disability studies minor. Not a lot of schools have it. And I majored in film studies because I wanted to take screenwriting classes. And my screenwriting teacher, her name is Mira, she ended up being, like, a mentor to me, and when I was applying for my MFA, and I didn't know where I wanted to go, and she was one of my letters of recommendation writers, and I was really influenced by her, and that's how I also got interested in teaching, because I didn't know until I got into my master's, like, that I wanted to teach, but when I thought about it, I was like, well, she was the person that influenced me, and stuff, and I don't know, it's kind of funny how things just kind of work out. Like, I knew I wanted the MFA for sure. The PhD is another whole story. but yeah, no, it really is. Because the PhD I wasn't expecting at all. My MFA, I went to Cal State Northridge, which is in Los Angeles. My degree, the MFA is in screenwriting, but I was the first person in the history of the whole program to write a TV pilot, and I fought for that. I fought for that pilot. They were more focused on film, and I was writing a script, like, when it came time to write my thesis, that I wasn't happy with. I just wasn't happy with it at all. It didn't have disability. Like, it was a sci-fi film about a geneticist, and I knew nothing about genetics and nothing. So I was like, I went to my thesis advisor, who's disabled. She does introduce me in the video that you saw.
Oh, okay.
She was my thesis advisor and my professor, and I went to her and I said, you know, this idea isn't working. I have this idea for this TV pilot. Can I, like, and it was a month before my thesis was due, okay? Like I do not recommend this. And I was like, can I change my idea last minute? I know it's not the, you know, the best thing, but I have this great idea. And she's disabled. She's hard of hearing, and she's a hardcore feminist, so I did definitely learn a lot from her in terms of, and after I, because I kind of did my thesis and then had to take more classes because of just how the program worked out. So she's like, yeah, like, just see if you can get it approved by, like, the higher ups, like the other people in the graduate committee. And they let me do it finally, and the script, like, was just so much better, because I was writing something I really wanted to write and that I really believed in. And the main character is a wheelchair user, and it's a fantasy drama. It's on my blog. There's a little blurb on my blog about it. And I, you know, it was just a project that I believed in, and I was the first person to write a TV pilot, and I pushed for it. So now other people who are writing their master's theses at Northridge who want to do TV, like, they're allowed to do that now because of what I did. But I was also a teacher's assistant, or a They called an instructor's assistant for my thesis advisor. I was teaching, I was giving lectures and teaching in her class, and she said she wanted to record my first lecture. She wanted to video it, and we couldn't make it work, and it was about TV drama writing. And the second lecture that I gave, which is what you saw, it was a lecture, and it was 45 minutes long, but it was condensed into 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was.
And she's like, I want to put it online and so people can see it. So it was put online, and I posted in a bunch of, like, disability studies Facebook groups and different things. And professors from CSUN in the education department contacted me and was like, hey, we really like your lecture. Can we meet up? Because we want to start forming a disability studies minor at Northridge, and you've done the minor at Berkeley, and so I met up with them, and one of those professors had graduated from Chapman in the PhD program that I'm in now, and I told her that I was interested in it, and she said, let me put you in touch with my advisor, my dissertation chair, because she's the head of the program. And so she put me in touch with her, and by the time this person got in touch with me, she literally said, and I'm not making this up, she said, oh, by the way, like, it's, you know, nice to meet you, and I think your interests are really fascinating with disability representation in the media. And Chapman does have a film school, and I did express, you know, to this other teacher that I had wanted to, if I did go to Chapman, that I'd wanted to take classes in the film school, take TV writing classes, and do a creative dissertation, write a TV pilot, like I did for my master's, but at the doctoral level, you know, write a TV pilot for my dissertation or something creative, because that's not what PhD students typically do. Like, there are some creative dissertations out there, but it's not typical. Mostly you're going to get a quantitative dissertation, which is all numbers and stats, or a qualitative, which has a lot of interviews and data like that. But I said, I want to do something different. It was just a total, I had just graduated 2 weeks before with my MFA. Like, it was not, and I had to, like, get all my letters of rec, and I had to write, you know, all the applications. But they're like, you're in. If you want a spot, you're in. Which I talked to other people, you know, who've done PhDs and who've done different, and they're like, that doesn't happen.
That's not how it goes.
You need to go for it. You need to go for it. You know, because, like, you had asked him the question, like, how does your PhD tie into your interest? And I wouldn't have said yes if they hadn't said, we'll let you do exactly what you want to do, which is, I want, for my electives, I want to take the TV writing classes, and I want to do a creative dissertation, because disability studies is so, there's so much you can do with it, but there are so few programs that have, there's only 4 PhD programs in the entire U.S. and Canada. There's 1 in Canada, there's 3 in the U.S. And there's one, you know, that's right near where I live. It's a half an hour from, you know, my parents' house. So, and the rest are on the East Coast or Midwest, and I'm not going there. So, and Chapman is the only one with the film school. Chapman has an excellent film school. And I've always been writing, like, even my PhD advisor, he's super supportive, and he's like, I think it's really interesting what you want to do, and I'm glad that you want to do it, because you're not a qualitative researcher coming in and wanting to interview people about representation in the media. You actually want to go and do it make the change and go and do it that way. But, you know, it's difficult. But I do want to make sure I tie in my interests with my studies, or else I wouldn't be doing it. So I know that's a long story, but that's kind of how it happened.
So would you still interview people, though? For instance,
I still
industry?
Want to. I don't know how it's going to work, because I'm not at that stage yet. I'm still taking classes. But I still want to interview people, like, in the industry and stuff. But I don't know how, I just don't know how that's going to work exactly into what I want to do. But, you know, it is all about networking and meeting people. So you never know. I don't know yet. We'll see.
Well, going back to the presentations themselves,
yeah,
BinderCon and the one that you did with your advisor, it's interesting because I was talking to another guest that aired this time around last year, also Ashley Lauren Rogers, who's transgender. I know Ashley. Isn't Ashley the best?
Yeah, she's super
she
sweet.
She was at
yeah.
BinderCon LA last year, too.
I met her at BinderCon, yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome. Great. And she was talking about the education factor, you know, because Ashley is very considerate in offering this education. And you're also doing a service by talking about it, too. You know, like, this is an exertion yeah. of energy to educate lay people like myself who aren't aware of this because of privilege. And right. in terms of those conversations, A, what is usually the responses that you get? And B, are you ever surprised, or maybe at this point you're not surprised, by how much people do not know?
Yeah. I'm not surprised because, like, I don't expect people to know.
Mm-hmm.
But the reactions that I get when I present, usually if it's, like, a presentation or if I go to a conference and I give a usually it's pretty positive. They're like, oh, wow, you know, I didn't know that, or thank mm-hmm. you for informing me of that. But I think it's kind of just a matter of, like, keep drilling it into people because I think a lot of people don't know. I mean, there was a lot of things that I didn't know about language of disability and things, and I actually learned it from connecting with other people on Facebook and social media and stuff. What's the right language to use, what's not.
Mm-hmm,
So I think that I'm really, like, not surprised at what people don't know because I don't expect them to know, and if they already know, it's kind of like, oh, that's great, but I don't mm-hmm. expect them to really know. And I do like to educate and stuff, but I also don't want to feel like it's, you know, I don't want it to feel like a movie special soap. Like, I want it to feel authentic, you know, like, I don't want it to feel like I'm forcing this on you or I'm preaching this to uh-huh. you, because, like, any minority is going to feel, you know, we're all going to feel jaded, or we're all going to uh-huh. feel, you know, and made to feel insignificant in some way. And then you talk about, like, intersectionality of minorities, and that's, like, a whole other thing that blows people's brains up for some reason. It's like, we can have a disabled character, but we can't have a disabled queer character. We can't have a black lesbian disabled character, you know, but we can have a lesbian character that's white.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't understand that. I'm like, I'm at the point in my writing now, and I didn't see this before, but I see it now, that I'm like, why not have that intersectionality? Let's celebrate that. Let's
mm-hmm.
challenge the boundaries of what people expect. And let's talk about the tough things, too. I feel like in my presentations, I haven't done this,
mm-hmm.
but in my writing, I have, like, you know, the hot button topic, let's say, is abortion, but I don't want to talk about abortion. I want to talk about miscarriages and premature babies. I was a premature baby. I want to talk about that. You know, I want to talk about sexual assault against people with disabilities. You know, I was sexually assaulted. I was, mm-hmm. you know, I want to talk about the stuff that people aren't willing to talk about because of the stigma and they're too afraid. And that is hard to talk about, like, in a presentation, but I feel like if you put it in a certain way to make it accessible, which is, that's the hard part, making people understand, you know, when I give these presentations, if the problem is, the reason why people come up to me and they're surprised, or, oh, I didn't know this, is because there's so little in terms of the representation
mm-hmm.
of what we're seeing in the media, in film and TV, and in books. We're not seeing either the right representation, because we're seeing a stereotype,
mm-hmm.
or we're seeing, like, really, like, we're seeing no representation. So it's, people don't know how to respond because of the representation that they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So if we see more types of accurate representation that we should be seeing, which means casting disabled actors in roles, in mm-hmm. disabled roles, etc.,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
then that could help sort of break some of the stigma. I mean, basically, Cripping Up, which is, you know, a non-disabled actor playing a disabled character, I equated to the equivalent of blackface. It is. Mm. To me, it is. Like, and I don't like seeing blackface. Like, I was so concerned, and I know this is a little tangent, but I was so concerned because I like to go to Comic-Con, and I was so concerned because I wanted to cosplay a black character, And I was like messaging some friends, and I was like, is it okay that I cosplay a black character? I'm not going to do blackface. I just want to cosplay this character because I think she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And her hair is amazing. And her, like, she has like tattoos and she has stuff that I don't, you know, that's not me. And I'm like, is that okay? And they're like, well, as long as you're not, you know, engaging in blackface and you're just trying to capture the spirit of the character, you know, I guess that's okay, like,
mm-hmm.
but it's a hard thing. Like, I just really wanted to play the character, be the character, because I like her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree with not doing blackface, and it's fine.
Yeah, like, just, oh gosh,
just don't do blackface.
Yeah, it's terrible. I would never do that. I think, I mean, I knew that already, but I was like, do I play the character anyway? Because I just like her, and she's spunky, and she owns a bookstore. And it's like my inner nerd girl, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, my friend's son was Martin Luther King, and she's white, her son is white, and he put on a suit. You know what I mean? And he's like, I'm Martin Luther King. And I'm like, that's cool. You know, he had a mustache. I was like, that's totally cool. Yeah. Like,
you just want to be the character.
Yeah, he really wanted to
and
be Martin Luther King.
I think when you have a disability or when you're a minority and you want to, like, you don't see yourself represented, so when it comes to like dressing up and stuff, it's like you want to be those characters and you want to be included.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you know, you want it in some ways, you do kind of want to be like everybody else. It's like, I want to be included too, so I want to see, you know, so I'm gonna play this because I want to see what I want to see. But it's just a different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that's like a long rabbit trail around your question.
But it also comes to the point of when you say we don't know, and we don't know because we're not seeing it, but it's also we don't know because we're not affiliated with people of these demographics, right?
Right.
So if I don't, or if most of my disabled friends are people who identify as having depression and, you know, clinical depression, which is also in my family, or having developmental disorders. Again, it's okay, I do know people in this community who are disabled, but I know a subset of people in this community who are disabled. So I don't know all about disability. No one really does. But because it's like, oh, I'm dealing with people who are mentally disabled. That's a very different thing. And it goes back to like the stigma of what we see, because I liked in I really appreciated the Vimeo, because you showed those examples, and that basically every time it is always an able-bodied actor. It's always an able-bodied actor. My left foot, and it's Oscar bait, you know, like you were saying, it becomes
even
Oscar
in
bait.
The sessions, the clip that I used from the sessions,
he's
an able-bodied actor, but filmmaker. Who made the film is Ben Lewin, and he's disabled. He has polio. And I did a whole analysis of that film recently, too, for a class, for one of my disability studies classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I kind of talked about, because I did wrote a whole paper on, is it okay for an able-bodied actor to play a disabled character? Which my personal answer is always no. But to really look into, like, if the director or the writer, and he was a writer and director, is disabled, and he just basically said, well, we couldn't find the right actor for the part. We did audition disabled actors, which is something that I don't hear, but we just couldn't find the right actor for the part. And then, you know, John Hawks comes in, and you know, he was perfect. But it's like, how? But then I always think, like, you know, if you're Brad Pitt or if you're a well-known actor, like, you didn't start off that way, so wouldn't you want to give a newbie, like, a chance to shine in a role? Like, because no one starts off that way. You get discovered and you get, you know, someone gave those actors a chance, like, giving writers a chance. Like, someone gave them an opportunity because they saw something in them. And there's over 4,000 actors that are my friend told me there's over 4,000 actors that are registered with Screen Actors Guild and Actors Access. So why aren't they being cast in these roles? Like, come on. You know, I mean, I know we have Breaking Bad and we have Game of Thrones and we have Switched at Birth, which I think just got canceled recently. I don't think it's enough, but I think with a show like Speechless, which has just come out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Speechless is great because the creator of the show actually wanted to hire a disabled actor for that part, which is great. However, there are no disabled writers on the writing staff. They might know someone with a disability. Like you were saying, it's like, well, I know people with a disability, but it's not within your lived experience. And I'm like, why aren't there disabled writers on that show who are writing about their lived experience? I have cerebral palsy. I can write for the show. Like, I'm not nonverbal like the character, but things have happened in my life. I could write for the show. Like, you know, and I think it's just a matter of, and in terms of Hollywood, in terms of film and TV, it's kind of like with editors and book publishing. It's just getting people to listen to us. But like Carrie Higgins was saying, people are not going to listen to us because they don't want to hear it, or they're not open-minded, or they're not, or they'll say, like, I know she's said in a lot of interviews, they'll say, like, can you tone down the disability part, or can you change that? And it's like, how do you change someone's lived experience if that's what they've gone through?
Exactly. But I also, I also wonder, when looking at the comparison to books and TV film, because it is all lumped together as media, but when you have the non-disabled actors getting praise, you know what I mean? And you said it as well, because it's Oscar bait, quote unquote. So they get praised, and it's, holy crap, Eddie Redmayne, can you believe he did that? And then,
oh, it's terrible.
But then if they did put an actor, if they did put an actor who more so correlated, was disabled, A, and whose disability correlated more with the story in that particular picture, would that person get the same amount of praise? And I see it in book publishing too, is that when white people or, you know, non-disabled, I shouldn't necessarily speak for the non-disabled, so I'll stick to when I see non-blacks write about blacks and they get all this praise, like, holy crap, did you see how they did it with slavery? You know, look at that story with slavery. And they get praise, and it's, and we're raising our hands over here, the black people, saying, well, we've been writing these stories and we're still writing those stories. But, and that's what I feel like, and I totally agree with what you said in the video, is that I feel like if even if a disabled actor was in that those roles, that one, Eddie Redmayne and Tom Hanks and Daniel Day-Lewis Oscars,
they wouldn't get the praise.
They would not. They would not get the praise.
No.
They'd be like, oh, they were just like, being themselves. I was like, no!
And
it's
like they could do for their careers, you know? Like, I was reading, when I was writing one of my papers, I was reading about the statistics of, like, why, and it wasn't about the media, but it was, like, why employers won't hire disabled people. This was just, like, a general thing, and it was in one of my reports that I read on acting, but it was just, it was more like a general study. They had incorporated, like, a general study, and it basically said, like, employers' attitudes about disability, they're fearful of disability, they don't, there are just things they don't know. They don't know if the disabled person can handle the workload, or they don't want to provide, as we like to use the term, reasonable accommodations for the disabled person to do the work. So it's easier for them just to not to hire the disabled person at all. I mean, which sucks for me, right? Because I want to, you know, finish my PhD and get a job, like, in the industry and in teaching and these things. But it's like, if you're not going to hire me just because you don't think I can do the job, then what chances do I have? Like, it makes it really difficult. And I think that, like you said, like, it, the performance might not be considered Oscar worthy to that performer, but you're giving them a job and you're giving them an opportunity. It's just not going to be looked at in the same way. And it's that's really discouraging. Like, you know, I was encouraged when I was doing my MFA, like, they were saying, because I didn't submit my work to, I've had scripts placed in contests and win, but for a couple years when I first started writing scripts, I didn't want to submit to contests because I was too afraid. Like, not about stigma or disability. I was just like, I don't think my work is good enough. Because, mm-hmm. you know, as writers, we all tell ourselves that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it took me a couple years until I was like, I feel like I have strong enough material to even start submitting to contests.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, you get rejection, rejection, rejection. It's like, do I keep submitting?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because somewhere along the way, you know, maybe you will get, except, like, I applied to the Austin Film Festival with my scripts from 2012 to 2015, and my script finally made it. In 2015, I had a script that placed in, like, the top 15%. It's on my blog. I'll also send you a link to my blog. And so I said, I turned to my mom, and I said, well, you know, this, I don't know if this is ever going to happen again. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's go to Austin, you know? So it's just like, and see what that experience is. But it's like, but it gets so discouraging because we're told that we can't submit our stuff or that our stuff isn't good enough or that we shouldn't put the disability or the minority into that. And when you talk about, if I want to write a, you know, a queer disabled character, like, oh, don't put that in there, like that kind of thing. And it's like, but that's what I want to write about. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm queer and disabled, that's what I'm gonna write about because that's part of my experience, and we're just writing about what we, the things that we have,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hit or miss.
Yeah, well, in terms of what you're talking about in with this reasonable accommodations,
yeah,
it makes me think of also the industry even more, the media industry, and again, I'm including books in that, because we don't, you know, disability is usually the least represented minority across the board.
Yeah,
in terms
it is.
Of, so,
it is, it's true.
And then when you're saying what you're saying, it comes back to the accessibility thing, which kind of hinders in my mind because I'm always thinking about it nowadays of, well, the accommodations of putting, yes, a ramp in a place, you know, making sure that the lights aren't too bright, making
right.
sure that the computer programming can read to someone who might be hard of hearing or deaf.
Right.
You know, or blind, you know, having access, being able to do things, having the equipment for people who are blind, just like all these little things that people should be thinking about. And it keeps bringing me back to the privilege conversation, because if they don't have to worry about the existence of materials that aren't supportive to other communities, then we live in this kind of theoretical utopian world where, oh, it's fine, we, you know, like, we're representative, but then we're still hiding these communities because
right.
they're not in the offices, they're not on screens, they're not in books,
right.
the members of the communities aren't in bookstores promoting their books, they're not at festivals promoting their movies.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly,
it's so laden in every section of trying to be an artist at a you know, how do you go to a residency if it's not accessible?
And how do you do that if it's not accessible? Exactly. Or, you know, if you're in a wheelchair or whatever and you can't get on a plane, or the airline breaks your wheelchair, which has happened to me
what?
Many times, that the airlines will break my wheelchair.
Do they pay you back? Would they break it?
I believe so. Or there was some kind of compensation, yeah. But it's like, you have these conversations about accessibility, and, you know, I kind of have to think every day what I'm doing in my life. Like, I have to plan out my life every day. And it's like, people don't have to think about that. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh, like, for example, for today is Sunday. The bus won't come to my house, like the paratransit bus. On Sundays, it won't. Like, I'm at my parents' house right now. It just won't. It just doesn't run on Sundays. It won't come to my house for whatever reason, because they're cutting back on funding or whatever. So it's like, I want to go out and do something, you know, and I don't drive, so I'm limited
mm-hmm.
on what I can do, because the bus won't take me, my parents can't always take me, a friend can't always pick me up, You know, so we have these conversations about accessibility. You have to think about, you know, where you're going, what the location is, mm-hmm. if it's accessible, how are you going to get there?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's just kind of, and you have to adapt sometimes, but sometimes adapting isn't always the answer either because things are just not accessible at all, you know?
And then so, expanding on that was that piece I posted on Facebook about how and why movements need to be inclusive. And like you said at the beginning of the episode, accessibility isn't just a ramp. And
it's not just a ramp, yeah.
And the person in this article also said, this, similarly, it's not one thing. There are so many factors that make things at events, workplaces, inaccessible, including money. Media professionals and other people who hire people listen to this podcast. I'm trying to get to a point where, you know, everyone wants information and they don't necessarily want to pay for it.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
You know, get this idea out there of what it means to support, actually support, capital SUPPORT, instead of theoretically or, you know, doing the RTs, the minimalist supports, the performative allyship, which I went off on the other day. it's like the reality for, because I really, it's incredibly privileged to be able to not have to worry about how you're going to get somewhere, just like you were saying.
Exactly. And no, it's true, because it's like, how do you do it? What resources do you have to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, since June, my wheelchair's broken down 6 times. I'm not making that up. You know, like how am I going to get around to get to what I need to do if I don't have the resources or the, you know, accessibility? Mm-hmm. It's going to make my life and my career and these things difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the tools are out there. No, it's not as though there are not these things out there that can help.
Right.
Make.
I always like to remind people, like when you talk about disability, I always like to remind people, like anyone at any point can become disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So you better start caring about something to do with disability and disability rights, because you could become disabled tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And disability is not breaking your leg.
Disability is so many things.
I think people are like, oh, I totally know what that's like because I broke my leg and was, no.
Yeah, like,
that's being hindered for a few weeks. That's not, that's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
Well,
and I think also because of, like, with invisible disabilities, it's like, oh, I'm sad sometimes. And it's like, no, that's not what depression is. like, I have anxiety, but, like, people are like, oh, I'm anxious sometimes. I'm like, that's not what anxiety is. Like, anxiety is, like, sitting here with me shaking and, like,
uh-huh.
You know, like, that's just not what it is. That's not what the experience is. And I'm not trying to discredit someone's other experience, but unless you have, you know, something that you're going through, and I think the invisible disabilities get knocked around more because you can't see them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of get pushed back even more than physical disabilities, and they are portrayed incorrectly in the media because people don't know how to deal with that, or they don't know what mental health services to get, maybe are not willing to admit they have a mental illness or whatever. I'm just like, it's not the same thing to say I'm sad versus I have depression.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, for me, I have post-traumatic stress, but, like, it's for, and I get triggered by certain things, but, like, that's not the same thing as, like, what somebody else is going through and what they say, and it's, I don't know, that's a hard thing to make people understand, I feel like. And I feel like that happens more with invisible disabilities than with physical, because people see me in the chair, so they see, oh, you might need an accommodation or you might need something, but they don't see, like, what's happening in my brain.
Yeah.
And that I'm shaking or that whatever, you know.
Oh, okay.
So that gets sidelined more than like the physical stuff.
And the disability within disability as well.
Yeah, that, exactly. Like, I have a sensory disability where I'm really sensitive to, like, we were talking before about, like, thunderstorm, like, I'm really loud noises and stuff. And I find that a lot of people don't understand that, like, when I'm around a noisy environment that I either have to get out of there, or, like, if it's something that I can't help, that I have to just put earplugs in and turn on Netflix or do something because, like, it's really gonna bother me, but it's like a legitimate thing. And I don't like to hear people say, oh, you're making it up, or it's in your head, and I'm like, for me it's very real, because what we experience is a real, it's a real thing. And I think the more that that's put out there, that honesty and that truth is put out there in our media, that's what's going to make people understand more. But if you get more pushback of people saying, no, we don't want to hear about that, then where is it going to go, you know?
Yeah. And what you're hearing is her bird, not the...
Yeah. That's why my bird is chirping, too. Yeah, my chirping.
Well, going back to stigma, also, in terms of the representations we see, whether in the written form, when we have really crappy things, such as... Me Before You, I believe, and
oh,
also,
God.
Oh, I forget the name of the boxing movie that Hilary Swank won the Oscar for.
$1 Million Baby.
Yeah, $1 Million Baby. And, you know, spoiler alert, people, but at the end, basically able-bodied people become disabled and then feel as though that's a curse and then want to die.
Yeah.
And there was so much pushback to, and I don't know, because again, I don't read Jojo Moyes' stuff. It just doesn't appeal to me in general. Million Dollar Baby, I had seen the movie, and I remember, it's based on a book, and I remember at the time, people in the disabled community being very upset about it around the time it was getting all these awards. And then with the current movie, the one that came out last year, the Jojo Moyes Me Before You came out, and it was louder, and that's in tune because of social media, because we didn't have social media when Million Dollar Baby came out. But there was still this really easy brush aside by communities of, yeah, but you have to understand what it's like for someone to suddenly be, you know, paralyzed from the neck down, you know, and it was so interesting how this, and I mean, we see dismissal all the time when minorities come and say that's racist, that's homophobic, that's transphobic, that's ableist, but again, when it came to the disabled community, a lot of people were pretty quiet, and then, of course, the industry is sitting there saying, well, you know, that's not how we meant it.
And it's like, yes, you did. You know you meant it that way.
Because you see so few disabled characters.
To protest Me Before You in LA, like, many months ago. To protest the film, because basically what Me Before You and what Million Dollar Baby are saying is that it's better off to be dead than disabled. And what I'm saying is, I'm not against, like, assisted suicide. Like, I know that's a big thing, but it's like, I can't just tell someone how they want to live their life. Like, I can't, that's not my life. If they want to do that, fine. But what I don't like about those narratives is that is often the only narrative we get as disabled people. It's either that or, like, you're a super crypt, like, superhero with powers and stuff, but it's like way exaggerated, or you're a villain that's stereotyped with mental illness, or, you know, you're like, again, you're like the victim of something, and it's just like, there has to be other kinds of stories that we can tell, that aren't that way. Like, I can't stop someone else from killing themselves, but, you know, that's because that's their choice, but that's that's not the only story about disability that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the media portrays it is like, that is the only way. And that's not true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, so I've learned a lot from just writing. When I started writing novellas, I learned a lot from some of the characters that I created. Like, from them, I learned a lot more
mm-hmm.
of, like, what I wanted to see from this story or this project that I was writing.
Because
some of my characters are queer and disabled, and I was like, I want to see them save the world, but I don't want it to be a stereotype. I want it to just be, they're going to save the world, and they're going to get hurt, and things are going to happen. Like, mm-hmm. people aren't innocuous, you know, we don't live in, you know, bubbles or whatever, but, like, you know, things are going to happen just like they're going to happen to any other type of character, but that shouldn't mean that we shouldn't get the chance to save the world or build a spaceship or
mm-hmm.
whatever as disabled people. Like, we should be allowed and have the chance to do, you know, whatever it is that we want to do. And I don't mean that in a way to sound like an inspiration porn kind of a way,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is a big term in the disability community
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just mean that we should, what I see when I think about accurate representation is like, let's just see someone living their life and whatever that is, have that and make that interesting and just have the disability or whatever be incidental, and they're going to come up against things because of their disability, but it's mm-hmm. not going to be like this, it's not going to be stereotyped, it's just going to be part of what they go through
mm-hmm.
also, in their lives.
Exactly. And also, I feel as though a lot of the disabled representation we see is the suddenly disabled. Not as though they were, the character was born that way, but suddenly became that way. And therefore, they become a quote-unquote better person because they know the trials of life.
Oh, yeah, there's that story, too. And you see a lot of, like, characters who become disabled, which gives the media, you know, in film and TV, reason to not cast a disabled actor. But a lot of my friends who are disability, you know, advocates like Carrie and stuff will say, you know, if you have, you know, Forrest Gump, and you have a character with no legs, why can't you just CGI, instead of CGIing the legs out, why can't you hire a disabled actor and CGI legs in? You mm-hmm. know, why can't it be used in the other way?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, if you're using CGI to, or something, to make a character walk miraculously, why can't it be done the other way?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what people aren't willing to think like that. You know, I really don't understand it, but I think what I would like to share with people who are listening is that, because I'm going through this right now, is you're always going to feel that you're not good enough,
mm-hmm.
and you're not doing something the right way or whatever, or you're editing a piece or you're making mm-hmm. a project, a film or a book or whatever, and you're like, oh my god, this is not, like, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready mm-hmm. for this. But I just want to encourage people to get their work out into the world. I know it's hard, like, it sucks, but, like,
mm-hmm.
and I wish there were easier ways to do this. Like, I wish I could just bang down on Hollywood's doors and, like, make it happen. Like, I wish I could just have people just listen to me. It just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
But I just think the more we have can work towards accurate representation of disability and all kinds of things, the better off we can be. But it's just hard. It's such a hard conversation because people are not listening to disabled people. So it's like, how can we have things be accessible if you don't listen to us?
And stop brushing
off. Catch-22.
Stop brushing off the disabled community. Also, talking to you, AWP. Like, they're a pretty jacked up conference in terms of disabled.
I know AWP has had a lot of issues.
Holy crap. I didn't pay to go. Huh. I mean, that's really one of the reasons is that, you know, being on panels to talk about of just like marginalization and whatnot, it's like, I'm not giving you a dime because you guys suck. Like, they really do suck.
Like, find us. Like, that's the problem. Like,
and don't dismiss them.
And you've tweeted this. If you want to hear, you know, or if you say you want to hear marginalized voices, hire us, pay us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll do the work, pay us. You know, we're not gonna, we're like, kind of like everybody else, but we don't want to work for free, but pay us. Listen to us, pay us, hire us. Yeah. You know, we will do the work, we'll do a good job, but, you know, in order to have our voices in there, pay us.
Yeah, and don't dictate what they should be writing.
God.
Don't dictate, oh my, like, God, can you tone down this? Yeah, it's so interesting. It really makes you think about the neurotypical and all this kind of mindsets going on. And that's why I'm so thankful for you and Carrie and so many other disability advocates, is because I was totally ignorant to my ableism. And if there's anything that I can do to be less ignorant and help other people be less ignorant, that's our role. You know, like, it's not to take over the voice of that community, but to be like, oh, snaps, I'm totally being ableist right now. Thanks for calling me on that.
Well, it's like fixing language, too. It's like, don't use the word retarded.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, special needs is a really iffy thing. Like, I cringe when people say, like,
special needs. And I see it all the time, especially in education books. They still use the term.
Well, I'm in education. I'm in the field of education. And it's like, special needs. And I'm like, no. Just say disabled. Just leave it there. Just say disabled.
Yeah. It's not hard. There are so many YouTube videos.
Yeah, exactly.
I watched a YouTube video. Videos. That's how I learned. Just like to do my hair. Like, when I went natural. Watch a YouTube video.
And I have a lot to learn, too, because I'm not, you know, I'm not a person of color, so I have a lot to learn about that community and about other communities that I don't belong to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do support it, and I do, like, I'm not transgender, but I do want to support that community because I have friends who are transgender.
Mm-hmm.
So we all kind of have to just support each other and don't. I feel like disability, like you were saying, disability gets left out of, like, feminist movements and all things.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just not part of the conversation. But I'm like, we're the biggest, we're the least represented minority, but we're the biggest one. Include us. You know? We are the biggest one because we're the only one, like I said before, we're the only one minority that anyone can join from any other minority. So the only way that people are going to learn and listen to us is if they start including us. And that's such a hard thing in Hollywood and stuff. Like, I would love to be a showrunner, you know, create my own show and have it be on a network or be on Netflix or be, you know, and I would love to write about queer disabled characters, like a Supernatural show about queer disabled characters. And then I think the whole thing is ironic because the two actresses that I want to write for the most are not disabled at all. But I also see the value and the benefit of, you know, going out there and finding actors to play the parts. Because people have asked me, who do you envision in such and such role in your script? And it's like, I don't have anyone to say. You know, I have no reference. Like, and that's sad because I think a lot of, like, with screenwriting, like, apparently I'm not the only one that likes to mentally cast certain actors, because I do that all the time. But it's like, when it comes to disabled actors, it's hard because we don't have much pickings, if you will.
Well,
you know, we don't have many choices.
Yet. Hopefully that's on the change, especially if there's, like, several thousand actors registered who are disabled.
Hopefully, and it just is going to take a bunch of advocates and a bunch of people to say, to really bang down the doors and say, hey, listen to us. But then it's also the problem of, like, money, right? You were talking about money before and money to attend residencies and stuff. And if we don't have the money, then our projects are not going to get made. It's just how it is.
And if you can't get paratransit to a meeting, then how do you get represented?
Exactly. So it's all a circular catch 22.
It really is. It's jacked
it
up.
It is.
It's jacked up to the max. It's really, yeah, really jacked up. But thank you so much for being on the podcast, Lara.
I really
appreciate your voice and all the work you do. And good luck on this PhD.
Oh my gosh, it's such a long journey, but thank you.
It really is. So how may people be able to reach out to you, follow you? What's your blog that people can start reading?
You want the name of my blog?
Yes, please.
The name of my blog is called Fangirl Life on Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Twitter. Yeah, Fangirl Life on Wheels. I know. And that's how you can find my blog, and it has a list of, like, my projects and mm-hmm. stuff. And then I'm on Twitter at True Cherry Girl, TRU, mm-hmm. Cherry Girl, which you can put up as a link if you want to when you post the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Facebook, too, under my name.
Cool.
Just my name. So, that's how you can find me, pretty much. But yeah, I don't update my blog frequently, but I have written a lot about disability mm-hmm. representation in the media, so I hope people will check it out and read it, and hopefully I can blog a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I have other projects that I'm working on, like it has some of the projects that I'm working on, some of the novellas, and I have a novel idea that I'm working on, and mm-hmm. I'll be working on a couple scripts next year for my classes, so it'll be updated again.
And if you Google LaraAmeen, like, your Vimeo shows up on the first page
awesome.
Of the Google search.
That's really awesome.
So you're.
I think that was my whole professor's, like, goal. I think she's like, we need, you know, people need to see this. Mm-hmm. And so she said we should put it online, and that was the whole thing, but... Thank you so much. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I was so excited to be a part of this podcast and to meet you. And, like, as soon as I met you, I was like, I have to be on her podcast.
Oh, thank you. That
makes
me smile.
Yeah, it was so cool. I started listening to episodes, and it was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, Carrie's is one of my favorite episodes because she was very hardcore.
Yeah, no, I love Carrie's episode. Carrie's episode was amazing. I was like, I don't think mine will be that amazing, but I learned a lot from just listening to it. Like, it's amazing what you learn from other people.
It is. And I really appreciate your voice and everything, and you taking the time again out of your Sunday to talk to me.
Of course. No, and I appreciate you. Like, I see all your Facebook posts, and I'm like, this is so cool. The stuff that she gets to do is amazing. So when you come to California, come see me, and we'll
hang.
Hang out. Yeah.
Cool. I'll rent a car, even though I'll...
Yes.
Yeah, we'll rent a car.
We'll go to the beach or something.
I don't swim, but that's cool. We can
swim.
No,
I don't swim either.
Yeah.
I don't swim either. No, but I'll show you all the beaches.
Oh, cool.
When it's not raining.
When the drought comes back.
We're staying
and watching Netflix. That's cool. So thank you again, and thanks to everyone for listening. Once again, you can find the podcast at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com and on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And thanks again, and we'll see you next episode.